Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a great program for you today. As we continue navigating the pandemic, thousands of teachers face immense challenges and exhaustion as workloads increase. Combine that with staff shortages, repeatedly switching between in-person and online teaching, and no clear idea of what the future holds, and you have a recipe for burnout. My guest today is Dr. Greg Hammer, a professor at Stanford University Medical Center and a pediatric intensive care physician. He has also been a visiting professor and lecturer on wellness at institutions worldwide. Dr. Hammer is also the author of the new book, Gain Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Today, Dr. Hammer will share strategies to proactively intervene and give educators the tools needed to maintain their health and not fall victim to burnout. For more information about Dr. Greg Hammer or his new book, please go to greghammermd.com. Well, welcome to the program, Dr. Hammer. Great to have you with us today.
Great to be with you, Terry.
And I am so excited to talk to you about burnout. What a very relevant topic. Before we get to our topic, though, let's tell listeners a little bit more about your background and what motivated you to write the book, Gain Without Pain.
Sure. I've trained in pediatrics as well as anesthesiology and further fellowship trained in pediatric anesthesiology and intensive care medicine. I've been at Stanford for 25 years. I'm also a long time, lifelong, I would say, health enthusiast, not only for my patients, but for myself. My undergraduate degree is in nutritional science. I've always been involved in athletics and physical fitness. And maybe 15 so years ago, I had trouble sleeping. And so I really focused my attention on sleep hygiene. And so, you know, that's another topic about which I have lots of enthusiasm. So in acknowledgement of the growing problem of burnout among physicians, Stanford formed a program called WellMD. And that was around 2015. I joined the program. Shortly after that, I was asked to give a talk to a national group of hospital administrators on burnout, and then that sort of took on a life of its own. I started getting more and more invitations to speak about burnout and wellness, and then I had some sabbatical time, and I have an active laboratory. I didn't want to leave the area, partly for that, and partly just because it's such a beautiful place to live here on Stanford campus where I have a home. So I thought, well, you know, I'm getting these invitations to speak. Maybe I could get the message out even more by writing a book. And so that's what I did. And it's been well received, and I'm very enthusiastic about that. And working on the next one right now. So
Wow, very ambitious. But first I have to ask you, do you sleep better now? That's probably the important question first.
Yes, I do sleep better. And, you know, obviously there are so many things that interfere with our sleep. Burnout being one of them for sure. And many people are now having difficulty sleeping, even if they didn't have it before the pandemic. But I realized and through studying sleep hygiene that there are really a handful of principles, I think, that could help many of us get a better night's sleep. And sleep, of course, is so essential in rejuvenating us and restoring us. So, yes, extremely important topic.
Extremely important topic. And maybe it's you can help us sleep better as well and give listeners some strategies. But first, let's talk about what constitutes burnout. What does that mean? And you talk about that it's been on the rise among teachers and probably all of us because of this pandemic.
Certainly. You enumerated many of the issues with teachers. But, you know, going back to your original question about the definition of burnout, burnout is emotional and physical fatigue induced by chronic stress. And stress is an interesting physiologic phenomenon, first of all. Acute stress results in an increase in the adrenaline in our bodies, or epinephrine would be the medical term for it. Acute stress induces an increase in the cortisol in our bodies, and that causes our blood sugar to go up, among other things. And these may be adaptive in the acute setting. For example, if a toddler falls into the swimming pool, we get acute stress response, the adrenaline goes up, the blood sugar goes up. This better equips us for mobilizing our physical forces and jumping in the pool and rescuing the toddler. However, when that process of increase in adrenaline and cortisol, among other things, persists for days to weeks to months or even longer, it has so many deleterious effects on our body. And this becomes sort of a positive feedback loop, if you will. In other words, the chronic stress causes adverse changes in our immune system, so we may get sick more readily. Causes adverse changes in our cardiovascular system. Hypertension may predispose to things like coronary artery disease. And certainly chronic stress interferes with our sleep. And the reason I say it's sort of a self-propagating cycle is that we're stressed, we don't sleep well, and then we're fatigued from the lack of sleep. And then our self-care in terms of our physical self deteriorates because we're tired. We tend not to mobilize the energy needed to get exercise. We pick up high sugar content foods, processed foods, so-called fatty comfort foods. And of course, this may give us a temporary boost in energy, but we crash from that. So it's all kind of self-propagating. And that's why it's so important to focus on the roots of chronic stress and learn how to let that stress dissipate.
So there's two things, I guess you're saying, Dr. Hammer, that listeners can do. They can look at their own behaviors, right? Are they sleeping well? Are they eating lots of sugar? Are they exercising? Are they fatigued? And those are sort of the outcomes of stress. But you're also saying that we can proactively deal with the causes of the stress as well. Am I understanding you correctly?
Absolutely. You know, I think, Terry, there are two aspects to the way we are wired that predispose us to chronic stress and burnout. And the first one is that we have a negativity bias. So we tend to remember adverse experiences and thoughts and forget about the positive ones. And the second attribute that we have is that we tend to have an obsession with the past and the future. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. First of all, I would say that it's adaptive, like acute stress may be adaptive. Contemplations of the past and future may be adaptive too. And I think this is analogous to acute and chronic stress. Contemplating our past mistakes only to the extent that it helps us from repeating them. And certainly contemplating the wonderful times we've had, our wonderful memories, is adaptive. But when we think about our past beyond that, we tend to, combined with our negativity bias, self-blame and have regret, remorse, shame. And the same goes with the future. It's adaptive to think about the future so that we can plan to put bread on the table and we can plan happy times with family and loved ones. But beyond that, our obsession with thoughts of the future tend to bring fear and anxiety. And I think in particular, that's what we're seeing during the pandemic, because uncertainty breeds obsession with the future. What's going to happen? And because of our negativity bias, we tend to catastrophize. And that is, we tend to think of the worst possible outcome, even though that hardly ever comes to be. Mm-hmm. And I would say parenthetically that in my fields of intensive care medicine and anesthesiology, it's adaptive to think about what the worst thing that may occur could be, because we have to plan for it and always be prepared for it and have a plan for it. But in general, in life, we don't need to think about the worst thing that can happen all the time. That simply mm-hmm. breeds anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing a lot of that.
Right. And that's fascinating, Dr. Hammer, because you're absolutely right. We cognitively, our minds have this negativity, has this negativity bias. We remember the negative much more than we remember the positives. And as you say, we are adaptive to focus on the past and the future. But when we do that, plus adding the negativity bias, that leads to stress and anxiety and the impact on our bodies, our health, and in my field, on our relationships as well. So I have a feeling that you're going to be talking about the GAIN method to help us then with that negativity bias and with the focus on the past and the future. So tell us a little bit more about the GAIN method, Dr. Hammer. I know that GAIN is an acronym for gratitude, acceptance, intention, and not judgment. Am I correct going there that this is a strategy to help us?
Absolutely. So, you know, we talked about the obsession with the past and the future being maladaptive beyond a limited point. Happiness is in the present moment. And if we all think about our happiest moments, it's easy to agree with that when we're happy, it's related to being very present. So we're taking a walk through the forest. We see the sunlight filtering through the leaves, the canopy high above us. We are just amazed at the old redwoods through which we're walking. And we're not thinking about what happened yesterday or what might happen tomorrow. We are just right there at that moment. And same with an intimate moment with our partner or just getting together with good friends maybe we haven't seen in a while. We're present during those times. And when we're present, we're happy. So the question is, how can we be present more of the time?
Right. And how can we? Any simple strategies? How can we do that? I know listeners are just wondering how to do that. They're listening to you say that, wanting to be present and mindful. But how do we do that?
Well, you know, Jon Kabat-Zinn, with whom I'm sure you're familiar, really is sort of the father of mindfulness. And he defined mindfulness, and I'll paraphrase, as awareness of the present moment without judgment. So being in the present moment intentionally, on purpose, without judgment. And therein lie some of the components of GAIN. So we, in order to be present, have to do so on purpose, because we do have this tendency to drift to the past and the future and have this negativity bias. So the point is, if we use our purposefulness, we can actually rewire the way our minds work and be more present. So awareness of the present moment on purpose without judgment. And the GAIN method, if you will, really embraces those concepts. When we are grateful, we are generally happy. So no matter how bad we think we have it, and we do tend, again, because of our negativity bias, to dwell on the negative, we all have much for which to be grateful. You know, first of all, those of us living in your, you know, listenership catchment area, we live in the U.S. We generally have a safe and warm place to sleep. We have access to food and medical care in general. We have our families, we have other friends and loved ones. Many of us get a lot of gratification from our work, even if it's aggravating at times. So there are many things in our lives for which we are grateful. So when we focus our attention on those things, we bring ourselves into the present moment and we sort of pull the rug out from under this negativity bias by being grateful. And I think that's easy for everybody to recognize. For example, you can be blind and grateful. You can be otherwise physically challenged and grateful. You can be poor and grateful, but you'll never see somebody who's happy and ungrateful. Mm. So gratitude is an essential component of happiness and presence.
And, you know, one of the things I recommend often, Greg, to my clients is to write exactly what you just mentioned down on a piece of paper and maybe look at the piece of paper, even if you've gotten, you know, two things down there or 10 things down about what you're grateful for, you know, your home, your work, you said, your relationship, your health, your schooling, what your friend, whatever you may think you are grateful for, write it down. Look at it every morning. Look at it every night to remind you and try to change those brain synapses. Would you agree that that might be a helpful thing for people to do?
Absolutely, Terry. Journaling is something that many people get a lot of positive, you know, guides positive thoughts and experiences. So I would certainly agree with you that journaling is a great idea for many of us. And having a gratitude journal is perhaps first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. Writing it down, having a gratitude journal, even going to your friends and family members to say, what are they, you know, feeling gratitude about, to even help you come up with some of those gratitude journal entries is helpful as well. Now, you argue that gain practice can substantially reduce stress and increase well-being in as little as 3 minutes a day. Is that right?
Yes. So I can describe what I recommend as a daily morning gain meditation. We get up in the morning, we open the blinds, we do our morning hygiene, and then we find a place to sit comfortably. We've already set our alarm for 3 minutes earlier than we might have otherwise the night before. That gets our intention set. Nobody's going to miss 3 minutes of sleep. If you will, then just go to bed 3 minutes earlier. So we get up, we do our hygiene, we sit in a comfortable place in any position we choose, and we start to focus on our breath, which is, I think, the basis of most forms of meditation, and it's always with us and accessible. So we slow it down. We take a slow inspiration to a count of four, hold it for a count of three, and exhale effortlessly to a count of four. And slowing our breath down decreases the adrenaline in our bloodstream. It lowers our blood pressure. And then once we've done a couple of cycles of that slow breathing, we begin to contemplate our gratitude. So if you do this on a regular basis, you may sort of have a bullet list. I'm so grateful for my health. I'm grateful for my relative wealth, for my loved ones, etc. And you do this while you're, again, kind of in this slow, deep breath mode. And then we transition to acceptance. And acceptance is so important. And as the Serenity Prayer would have it, we need to discern between what we can change and what we cannot change. And for what we cannot change, we must accept. And we tend to resist unpleasant thoughts and experiences. But in this case, when we're on the A or acceptance portion of the gain meditation, we actually visualize as we breathe, opening our chest, opening our heart, bringing that which is painful and induces suffering closer and closer until it's really merged with us, until we feel that we can live with that pain forever. And there's a formula in my book, Terry, suffering equals pain times resistance. So we have a pain, and if we resist it, it magnifies our suffering. But the opposite of resistance in this case is acceptance. If we accept it and open our heart to it, our suffering is minimized. And so that's...
Have a question on that, Greg. You know, if you accept it, are you accepting then the negativity and wallowing in the negativity? I know that many of my clients ask that question. Is acceptance equal to acknowledging and recognizing negativity? And is that okay?
Well, I think it is okay to recognize that there is pain and suffering in the world. And that may be personal. It may be more global. I think many of us feel the pain and suffering of those in India and elsewhere in the world where the pandemic is raging. You know, if we listen to the news every day, we're hearing about how they have inadequate supplies of oxygen and, you know, basic medical care in India right now. And so I think it's essential that we open our hearts to this pain and suffering. And yes, we acknowledge that pain and suffering are part of life. And that's okay. If it's something that we can change, we make that determination, and if we have the time and energy to do that, we work on changing it. But there are so many things we cannot change. Like, you and I cannot change in a very significant way what's happening in India right now. And so we have to accept the global and personal pain and suffering that exists. And I think that's a very healthy way to approach what's inevitable in life, you know, including our mortality, which is a source of great fear and anxiety for most of us.
Right. Well, thank you for that clarification. I think that helps a lot. And let's talk now specifically about teacher burnout a little bit, Greg. How can teachers create balance if they're experiencing burnout, or if they don't know if they're experiencing burnout, in work and family responsibilities?
Again, I personally would just go back to the GAIN method. And you know, I think we're all experiencing a lot of stress. Teachers, certainly, but equally, I would say parents, and they're linked because, you know, parents of school-age kids have had to deal with having them at home where online learning is such a challenge for many of them. And of course, deprivation from all the social interactions that are so important to kids as they're growing up. You know, parents have to deal with the kind of on and off, schools open, schools closed, it's open for a half day, but, you know, parents may have a full-time job. So extremely challenging. And likewise for teachers, I think, you know, having to teach online, if you will, has been very challenging. And then, you know, many teachers have their own kids. So now all of a sudden, the teacher is expected to go into the school and teach when the school reopens, but what about their kids? Plus, I think just dealing with all the challenges that their students have with learning these days, both online and then as things resume, as schools open, the challenges aren't over. And so, yes, I think it's been a particularly stressful time for teachers, but I would also say for parents of school-age children, it's just been an extremely challenging year and a half.
Right. Absolutely. And so you're suggesting then, or stating, Greg, that the GAIN method can be used as well for that distress, for that stress, for that burnout.
Absolutely. So I would just go back to fundamentals. And so we have our physical body, we have our emotional and spiritual body. For our physical body, as we've discussed briefly, sleep, exercise, and nutrition are the tripod on which our physical wellness rests. So focus on sleep hygiene with regard to having a regular bedtime, a regular wake time, avoiding alcohol, you know, within several hours before sleeping. If you're sensitive to caffeine, eliminate even that afternoon cup of coffee, because caffeine has such a long half-life. It's still there when we try to go to sleep at night if we have even an afternoon cup of coffee. So sleep, exercise, some is better than none. We might aspire to 5 hours of relatively vigorous exercise, even just a vigorous walk around the neighborhood, 5 hours a week if possible. But again, some is better than none. And nutrition, let's maybe move toward a more plant-based diet. Let's eliminate processed, sugary, and fatty foods from our diet to the extent feasible. So sleep, exercise, and nutrition for our bodies, GAIN for our spiritual well-being.
Very helpful. Sleep, exercise, nutrition, have a regular bedtime, avoid alcohol, avoid caffeine in the afternoon, regular exercise. I love that you mentioned some is better than none as well. Now, we only have a few minutes left, Greg. If there's one message that you want people to take away from today's program, what might that be?
I would say that you know, we have a negativity bias. We have an obsession with thoughts of the past and future. I think the most important message is that our minds remain plastic, or they can be changed. So even though we have this negativity bias and this obsession with past and future, we can change that if we're purposeful. That's the I in gain, is intention. And if we drop judgments of others, ourselves, and the world around us, that's the N, which is non-judgment, we can rewire the way we think. And so our brains have this quality called neuroplasticity. And we need to remember that we're in charge of our thoughts to a significant degree, but it takes practice and a regular practice at that.
Very good message, that change is possible and that we have control over changing our thoughts. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Hammer. You provide some wonderful strategies for listeners and educators during these challenging times. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Terry.
And again, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Dr. Greg Hammer or his book called Gain Without Pain, please go to greghammermd.com. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. And I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.